welcome. This is the FDH Lounge appearing here on the Sportsology channel with Sportsology. A note about that in a moment, but I'm Rick Morris. I've got Russ Cohen here with me. This is his setup. This is his channel. I just want to take a moment and explain what we're doing here. I am from the FDH Lounge webcast. We have a history. You can check it out at thefdhlounge.com. 152 episodes, 4.5 years of programming. Recently, we ended up taking distribution into our own hands here. We've been fortunate to be in a position of having some good talks with some folks about where we go with the show from here. And as an interim solution for our broadcasting, Russ Cohen, our good friend, stepped into the breach as the good friend that he is. We've been working with him for years now under the banner of the 21st Century Media Alliance. You may see some of the guides that we've been putting out together the last couple of years, the fantasy football one, the most recent among them. You can find that, of course, at the Sportsology site, sportsology.info, as well as fantasydrafthelp.com and thefdhlounge.com. So it was natural for us to come together on this. We've got some mini episodes that are going to be coming your way over the course of the next couple of weeks. We've been used to doing full-length episodes previously. We're going to be doing some mini episodes for the time being. Let me just explain what that's going to be about. Previously, we've been doing shows 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours in length. The ones that we're going to be doing now are going to be in shorter bites. We're going to get together with Russ and Sportsology here whenever we have a guest, as we do tonight. More about that in a second. We've also got some podcasts that we're going to be recording with some of our FDH Lounge dignitaries. By the way, that's our name for our cast members like Russ and myself. So we have a mixture of those. You'll be able to find everything you need at our blog at thefdhlounge.blogspot.com, and as well as links to tonight's show and subsequent ones, and as well as the actual podcasts themselves that we will be doing. So we have on with us here tonight, we're going to be joined shortly by our good friend Ken Palmer from Pigskin Insider and the Giant Insider also. You can find his work at thegiantinsider.com. He covers the entire NFL with an emphasis on the New York Giants. We've had him on the FDH Lounge many times before. It's going to be a pleasure to get to talk football with him again tonight. But having set all of that up and I think explained at least somewhat what we've got going on here, let me address and thank personally here my good friend Russ Cohen, who is making all of this possible. Russ, thank you for hosting these FDH Lounge mini episodes here over the course of the next several weeks. We really appreciate it. It's going to be a lot of fun tonight.
No problem, Rick. I just figured this would be a good way for you to get back on the ground running. You could at least get moving quickly this way, where you now don't have to at least learn all the little nuances just to get your show going again.
Well, all options are on the table. We have a number of different things that we're looking at here, and I'm very impressed by the setup as I've seen it thus far and learned about it from you and the infrastructure that allows us to do something like this. This is going to be tremendous, and I look forward to you and I have done a ton of segments on the show. You were actually, I believe, the first person to come in as a dignitary, more or less from the outside, from our original cast that we had. We started the show in January of 07, and I believe it was in June or July that you came on the first time and almost immediately became a dignitary. So it's great to get to do these shows with you here and broaden things out a little bit for both of us, I think.
No, I agree. It's a lot of fun, and this is a show where down the road we'll invite people to call in. We have a chat room. The chat room's open. And so these are other ways that people can sort of communicate and be a part of the show, which is kind of nice. I mean, that's something where we could add some new elements to your great show.
Well, I look forward to anything that we can do. I look forward to anything I get to do with you guys at Sportsology, Russ. I know that we've got our football guide that's out now. We refer to these as being the ones for fantasy and non-fantasy. We've got some nice elements in there as well. I guess that's as good of a segue as any to sort of get into our main topic tonight of the NFL. We'll be talking about that with Ken in a little bit, and he's going to be joining us from Giants camp when he's able to get away from there. They've had a lot of news going on there. But in the interim, We've got our guide. That's one of the things that's really bound us over the course of the last couple of years working on these things. I found it to be a very good arrangement. We can do things, certainly more things together than separately, which is sort of what the 21st Century Media Alliance stands for. So in there, one of the things I want to address in particular, for as much as people are into Madden, how it is just a game that just grips the nation like almost nothing else, you've got a great review in there of Madden 12 and getting to check that out in person, being fortunate enough to get a sneak peek on it. And I have to say, I really enjoyed your article as I was going in and formatting it in there.
Well, thanks. Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and I got to really take part in two Madden events. That first one really showed off that game and a lot of other games for EA, and people could check that out on Sportsology if they like. But the other thing was, then they had another event, which was went about halfway, and then it got rained out almost. And once it went indoors, you couldn't really do any interviews because the sound was bad, and you couldn't really take any pictures because they didn't really want you to. So, you know, that was... Then there was some issues, but before that happened, I did get in a great interview with Herschel Walker and did get some good information as well. So it's really good. I think people will really enjoy Madden this year. I think with all the different versions out there, they're going to have to check it out on the site because there's no way I could explain to you everything that's in the Wii, everything that's in the 360, everything that's in the PS3. But the best thing I could tell people is I feel like the best-looking one still is the PS3. So... if that helps anybody, there you go.
Okay, so that's the one that's got the sharpest graphics. And then
yep.
I believe they're adapting it now for the tablet, are they not? Is there a
yep.
tablet version of Madden available?
Yep, the iPad 2 version. And I have to say, it's pretty kick-ass. It looked great. The best feature in that game, and I also put that in my review as well, best feature in that game, what I felt like was cool was when you call defensive play, generally you're just picking one guy, and if you're a defensive lineman, you're going to sack somebody. Even if you're a cornerback, you might go to sack somebody. But with this one, you could literally, the minute the play is called, stop the game for a second and basically touch as many of your defensive players as you want and have them go in a particular direction. So you can put this guy right, that guy back, that guy left, that guy back. You know, and do that and then continue the play. And then your guys will start acting independently with your own direction. Now, that's only in the iPad 2, but I think that's a pretty cool feature, especially if you're not a huge button control gamer, but you are more of a sim guy. That would really interest you.
Interesting. That is very interesting. Because again, as somebody who's not a tablet owner, but certainly aspiring to be one, hopefully in the near future here, again, these things look fairly fragile. So I'm just curious about how that equates with a kind of not necessarily rough gaming type effect here, but how does it work with the controllers? It's interesting what you mentioned about touching on the screen, but how does something as fragile as an iPad 2 manage to host such a great game?
It seemed pretty seamless, and it is all on screen, and your fingers just do the walking, and it's really nice. And I thought the graphics were really good, certainly not to the same level as a 360 or a PS3, but pretty much the same level as the Wii. And then I felt the functionality was excellent, and I wasn't even looking at the finished version. Had no idea what the price is. But that's something that they just weren't able to tell us. But everything else about it was good. And then if you wanted to, you could literally, via an HDMI cord and an adapter, hook it to your big screen TV.
Oh, that would be interesting. Yeah, because the iPad, I know it's been used with some of the different apps for functionality to be able to transmit things to the TV. So it's very interesting in the video game realm. It works the same way.
Yeah, so this is a new way to sort of jump into Madden and not have to have a console. And I think that's great. I think the more versions they can make of these things, the better. They even, as an example for their Tiger Woods Golf, basically have that available via browser. Just the browser. You don't have to buy the game. You play online 100%. And I could see that happening. I could see other versions of other games happening with that very soon. I could see Madden probably being the next one. So once they feel like they've got the Tiger Woods one down, which I feel like they do, they really, again, it looks tremendous and it's just playing out of your browser, then you might start to see some of the other games go that way. So things are sort of coming back to the PC as much as they are on the consoles as well.
Well, there's a lot of different ways to enjoy these games, and yeah, it, ways that are beyond the traditional that we think of with the consoles and the controllers and everything that's involved with that. Yeah, your review in there, that's definitely something people need to check out in Fantasy Football Draftology 2011. We have that in there. Of course, we've got your fantasy football content. We've got your draft boards. We've got a mock draft in there. Draft boards powered in large part by the FantasyDraftHelp.com Ultimate Quantitative Baseline System, the UQB, the ultimate measure of what players did last year on the field. And that we kind of take that and use that again as a baseline for this year's production, adjusting players up or down. So many things that I think people want to check out in there. But yeah, I certainly wanted to single out the Madden review, because that's definitely something I know that sets us apart in that, is having the feature from Sportsology, with you having been at the conference and able to give it a preview. We've got some other things in there as well on just previewing the general NFL season, and just sort of taking us to a little bit of where we're going tonight with talking football. And again, it's an off season like none other, Russ. When you look at how everything was compacted down in the last several weeks here since the settlement of the lockout, my sense of it has been, and I know this hasn't been universally agreed to by people, but my sense has been we're going to see way more continuity than we've seen in past seasons. I know that one of our FDH Lounge dignitaries, Nate Noy, he has disagreed with me and said there's always six or seven new teams in the playoffs every year, but this just strikes me as a year where there's going to be way more continuity. I've sort of nicknamed it the 2010-2011 regular season. How do you see it shaping up?
No, I have to agree with you. I think when we're 5 years away from this, this year will be an aberration. I'm not sure if it'll be an aberration in who wins the Super Bowl. We'll see. But certainly how the season started, all the free agents, all the different things that are going on. To me, it almost seems like a team's GM is the most important member of the team now. Coach secondary, quarterback the next guy. But it seems like the GM is the most important guy now. And it's not normally that way. But when you look at the short amount of time these guys have had to get everything done, I think it's hard to argue that.
I think that's absolutely right, because the personnel construct out there, that you're pretty much going to live or die based on who the coach is supplied with the players. And it's one of these things, I think, also, too, where it's a leveling effect a lot of years. When you say, where did this team come from? Where did that team come from? Somebody like Tampa Bay last year, well, there was a lot of invisible work that went into that prior to the season, the OTAs, the mini camps, and the fact that the NFL has essentially become a year-round type of business here, and the players don't get a ton of time actually off. I mean, they've got that window in June leading up to training camp, but that's probably the biggest one that they have. And I see it as being a leveling effect that's not there this year, because you have the bad teams, the teams that are adjusting. My Cleveland Browns, who've got a new head coach and a new system with Pat Shurmur and then Dick Duron defensively moving to the 4-3. All of a sudden, you have these bad teams that don't have the chance throughout the offseason to be able to get better. I see that as being every bit as significant, Russ, as the New Englands and the Philadelphias of the world gorging on the big-time free agents that they have.
Yeah, no question. I think this is a year where it's going to sort of resemble baseball, and whoever you thought the top franchises were last year, most of them will be the top franchises this year. There might be one or two surprises, certainly depending on some free agents that were picked up and maybe some rookies that might emerge, and going with that, you might have something a little different, but I think you could almost, you know, name the playoff teams now, and you wouldn't be that far off, where in other years there's so much parity that it matters a lot. But I have to tell you, I think the one story that worries me the most, and yet it's become like, I don't want to say a non-issue for the moment, but it's going to be a big issue soon, is the matter of the Vikings maybe moving to L.A. And I love how the owner's like saying, hey, don't worry about it, you know, not that big a deal. And I'm sure fans over Baltimore could tell them a thing or two. And it's just a weird thing, because I understand that they're going to get a new stadium in L.A. I understand it's the nation's second leading market. I also watched all those other teams not work out there, and it wasn't because they weren't good. They just didn't work out. The people there just didn't care enough about, you know, NFL football. They seemed to care about college football, and they certainly seemed to care about the Dodgers, although Dodgers attendance has dwindled now to the point where maybe that's going to start to change. I just don't see it. I don't know. I was recently in Minnesota, and they are definitely a city where they love their sports, and they really, everything's well attended there, and I just think if they went to L.A., it would be a big, big mistake. Now, the one positive would be they get an upgrade in the venue, because I was very surprised to see that the Vikings are still playing at the Metrodome, which when you walk up next to it, it was a little old-looking, and while the lockout was going on, they still had a picture of Brett Favre out front.
Wow. Wow, that's kind of surprising. That's definitely a sign of being dated. Well, let me ask you about that. Let me follow up, because on a reporter level, you're a little bit closer to the NFL than we are at the FDH Lounge. You probably talk to more people directly than we do. So I'd like to follow up on that a little bit, because as you mentioned, the Twin Cities, certainly very sports-crazed area. They love their Vikings. It's a tremendous heritage going back to the days of the Purple People Eaters. I don't know if it's quite a signature franchise in the NFL. It might be on that borderline of that, but you know, the last couple of years I've sort of just taken it for granted that it's going to be the LA Jaguars at some point, because there's a team where it's almost a complete consensus at this point, isn't it, that
right.
It was a mistake to have gone there. They don't have the population is A, not very big, and B, sprawling in that area, the greater Jacksonville area. There's a heck of a lot of square miles there, more so than most other major population centers. So with the consensus that they got a nice stadium, don't get me wrong, but there's that. But they got so many other strikes against them. That's very instructive to me, and as somebody who cares about the NFL, a little bit disconcerting to me to hear you say that you think the Vikings could be on the cusp instead of a team that maybe shouldn't have gotten a franchise in the first place.
Well, I think it's an issue where the Vikings right now are putting pressure on the city of Minnesota. They want their new arena. Maybe this will precipitate it. And if it does, then I'm sure Jacksonville is the one they look at. And I was down there for that Super Bowl when the Eagles were in it. And I got to tell you, if parking was an indication of how that place was, and I was parking in somebody's front lawn, it's pretty bad, dude. It was one of the worst places I'd ever seen set up for a Super Bowl. Simply, and I didn't go to the Super Bowl. I actually did everything else but that. And it just seemed like it wasn't equipped. They just didn't have the infrastructure. Restaurants weren't close, and if they were, they were in a bad neighborhood, so you wanted to go far away. I just think it's a failed experiment. Like you said, stadium's nice. Nothing else really is. So I think when push comes to shove, maybe the Minnesota guy's saying this just so he can get some traction on getting a new arena in Minnesota.
Maybe so. And again, I think that is definitely a team I'd like to see in the Twin Cities still. But what you said about Jacksonville, parking in somebody's lawn for the Super Bowl, I think to myself, okay, Lambeau Field, Green Bay, they've been there since the Paleozoic age. You just accept that. It goes with the territory. That's where Lambeau Field is. They got the neighborhood around it. Okay. If there's ever a World Series at Wrigley Field, it's going to be the same thing. You're going to end up parking on some dude's lawn, whatever. But that's
no,
something
it's worse.
With the territory.
You know
Jacksonville
do?
Came into the league in the mid-90s, Russ. What kind of planning are we talking about here where such a situation can exist and, moreover, such a city can get a Super Bowl?
Yeah, it's no planning, and I think I paid $75 for that, and I have to tell you, when I was at the Winter Classic, paid $75 to park in some little crevice in Chicago where they don't have any kind of mandate on parking. Literally, you could go there, have a flag, have some tickets, charge what you want, and if you own that little driveway or that whatever, you're now a parking garage. So I think we have Ken on the line, and I'm sure he's had some parking nightmares in his life, so I'll let you bring him on.
Wonderful. Okay, this is great. In addition to my good friend Russ Cohen here of Sportsology, who's been hosting this little affair here, happy to be able to bring in another good friend of ours from Pigskin Insider, somebody who we've had on the FDH Lounge many times, and tonight he is on for the debut of the FDH Lounge mini episode 1. Who better to bring in than our good friend Ken Palmer? Nice degree of familiarity and football talk here tonight. Ken, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, Rick. How are you guys doing?
We're doing
good.
Tremendous. It's great to have you on. You've been covering, of course, most closely at Pigskin Insider, the New York Giants. You're just coming from training camp, as I understand it. What are the major things going on right there now? I know there's a lot of transition on the offensive line. There's some other issues as well, but what are the big stories as you see them?
I'll preface it with my parking nightmare was $50 right outside Foxborough to park on someone's lawn. It was a preseason game, and I made the foolish decision not to go out of my way to get the parking pass from the Giants. I figured out, what the heck, I'll just park when I get up there. And sure enough, my best option was to pay $50 of my own dollars to park on someone's lawn. So that's what I have for you. Yeah. But back to the serious stuff. Yeah, it's been a crazy camp, but it's also been a quiet camp because there really hasn't been that many, you know, big people moving. The Giants, their main signing, and you know, you both, I hope you're sitting down before I drop this one on you, but their main signing of the offseason was a center, David Bloss from San Fran. Now, they think he's going to be a real good player. It seems like they've gotten younger on the line and more athletic on the line with this moving, but that's really the main addition to this team, and in doing so, they let go of two of the, you know, really all-time good guys, all-time Giants, and Sean O'Hara and Rich Seibert. But that's the move here, is just to get better on this offensive line, to get younger, get quicker, get more athletic, and in signing Boss to play center, and then moving the former second-round pick, Will Beattie, into the left tackle spot, they do that. So that's probably the biggest addition. Now, your losses, you lost Kevin Boss, and you know, it's not that big a loss when you look around at tight ends around the league, but he was a guy that really knew this offense inside and out, and he could block for you, he could catch for you, he could get you some yards down the field after the catch. So that may turn out to be a bigger loss for the Giants than they think, just because the guy they have behind them, Travis Beckham, he's been injury prone. He's only caught 21 passes in his first 2 years, and he's a pass catching specialist. So, you hear around the league the Giants lose Kevin Boss, big deal, but to this offense, it may turn out to be a bigger loss. And they lost him over $1 million a year. They offered him 3 years, $9 million, and he got, you know, 4 years, $16 million from Oakland. So he came back to the Giants and said, listen, can you just give me another million a year? He was willing to even take a 3-year deal for $12 million. He didn't even need the fourth year of the contract, but they said no, he walked, and now he's an Oakland Raider.
Not too surprising that he was willing to take less money to avoid playing for the crazy old coot in the white tracksuit, but you know, be that as it may, he moves on. Before I ask both of you guys here in our remaining time, I want to get some thoughts about the offseason and some of the more impactful things. Let me redirect to you for a second here, Ken. We've seen over the course of the offseason, of course, the lockout didn't prohibit all the different things that were going on, i.e. players yapping at one another. This rivalry between the Giants and the Eagles the last couple of years seems to have intensified, and that's before they basically took the cellophane off the season and things started up here in Asamoah, and the rest of the Dream Team allegedly has been assembled in Philadelphia. So what already was a pretty darn good rivalry in the league might now be definitively skyrocketing into the top five as it goes into this year. And it's a make-or-break year, really, for the Giants and for Tom Coughlin after the last couple of years falling short and never even coming close to reliving that Super Bowl glory. So talk about that in the prism of this year's rivalry and what you're looking for in those games and in the division as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, you start every year trying to win your division. You can talk about Super Bowl and want the Super Bowl and this, that, and the other thing, but chances are if you don't get out of your own division, you're not going to the Super Bowl. And, you know, wild card, sure, they've made runs to the Super Bowl, but it's not as often as the division winners have. So right away, that's the goal. You got to win the NFC East, and, you know, it's going to be, I don't want to say it's going to be wide open because Philly is definitely the best team, but you guys both have seen countless Dream Team and, you know, talent-laden rosters fall flat on their face. you know, an injury here, a bad play there. You know, sometimes you have too many egos. You saw how long it took for the Heat till they could play together. And
that was glorious, by the way.
Oh my God, it was phenomenal. Yeah, and I mean, they ended up, they got to the finals, which was obviously impressive, but they didn't win. No one remembers who loses in the finals. So, you know, so it, you may have that type of situation with the Eagles. Now, the Redskins think they're better. Their quarterback thinks they're going to win the division. And, you know, the Giants like to think they're better. To me, they're probably right around where they were last year. But last year was a team that won 10 games. So most years when you win 10 games, you're gonna at least make the playoffs. So, and of course, you have Dallas. Right? They're kind of easy to overlook. But it's hard not to look at this division and say the Eagles are going to win it, because right now, on paper, they are by far the most talented of four teams. But we all know they're not played on paper, and, you know, anything can happen going forward. The Giants fans, though, right now, they're in a potential nightmare, because you could make a strong case that the Super Bowl this year could be played between the Eagles and the Jets. And if you're a Giants fan, there's going to be a lot of them hanging from trees and jumping off buildings and everything else, because, I mean, the Jets and Eagles by far are two of your top four or five teams in the league, and the Giants are in that next echelon. They're in that second tier, not the top tier like those. So Giants fans are hoping to get soaked. There's a lot of injuries and bad bounces that go the way of both of the evil green teams, guys.
Well, what a great anticipation of the final segue here. I wanted to post this to both of you guys here in our remaining time. We'll start with you, Russ, since you are a big Jets fan. Is it the Jets? Is it the Patriots? Eagles? What do you think are some of the most noteworthy things that happen over the course of the offseason? Impactful, I guess. We'll frame it that way. I'll start with you, Russ.
Sure. Before I do that, I want to let people know, in the next 3 minutes and 40 seconds, the show will stop being live, and then we'll go to archives, and we have up to, like, 15 minutes in archives. So we'll just keep rolling on, and then, like, 20 minutes from now, they'll be able to catch everything else we did. So just wanted to let them know that. Basically, I think the Jets' pickup of Plaxico Burress was huge, but again, while I say that, there's no Jericho Cotchery, there's no Brad Smith, so there's a little bit of loss there. I still think with their receivers, they're gonna, with Santonio Holmes being re-signed, they're in pretty good shape in that part. I don't like the kicker. I don't like Falk. I think he's pretty terrible. They brought him back, so that could be an Achilles heel. Defense is pretty strong. Can't really complain about it. They're certainly one of the strong teams. The Patriots certainly are one of the strong teams. The Patriots playing games with the Jets, getting Sean Ellis the other day, certainly prodded them a little bit, and that was sort of interesting. The Eagles, what Ken was alluding to about the Eagles is, yes, they have all this talent on the field, yet at the end of the season last year, I saw Michael Vick choke when he had a lot of time left in the game. He tried to go for a touchdown right away and blew it. So that could be an issue. They also, their coaching is entirely changed. So while they have all this new personnel, they also have new coaches. And some would say some of their coaches are coaching out of position. So we'll see how that works out. So that could be a real bugaboo for them. But I do look at the Jets as one of the stronger teams. I think the Eagles, if their coaching's good, will be one of the stronger teams. I mean, they're certainly a playoff team, but I don't know what Vic will do. I do look at the Giants as a very good team, and I think they can make the playoffs and will be like a 10-win team. I think you really have to look at the Patriots. You might even have to look, maybe this year we'll finally see something out of the Raiders. Maybe they'll be a surprise team where all of a sudden they click. Because I have a feeling at least one team that will do that, Rick, and I'm sure they could possibly be one of them. They do have a decent amount of talent.
Well, in the aforementioned Fantasy Football Draftology 2011, I actually went out on a limb here. And it's funny because one of our ongoing segments in the FDH Lounge, one of our dignitaries that we do, Those Damn Hipsters with Kyle Ross, where he castigates hipsters, I'm afraid he's going to make me put the Buddy Holly era glasses on for this one. I'm picking Detroit in the NFC. Does that make me a hipster, Russ?
It might, or it could make you a hipster doofus, as I once heard on Seinfeld. So we'll see. I mean, it's tough to pick Detroit, but they have a good running game, and we'll see what the quarterback situation is like.
In my defense, that was before LeSure went down for the season, and the whole thunder and lightning scenario went up in a poof of smoke here, so to speak. Ken, we got a lot of different things that got set up for you here from where Russ was going from that. So react to some of his thoughts. Jets, Giants. Giants, Eagles, etc. So on the Giants, I guess we can rule them out for the impactful moves of the offseason. Patriots, really anybody else that was making the big moves there, what do you think, Ken, were the most impactful ones?
To me, it had to be New England. You hear about Philly, but New England had a better roster to begin with, and they seem to have guys that, you know, you look at an Ocho Cinco, not that he's been a problem, but, you know, he needs to be reined in, and that's the coach and that's the team to do it. You look at a bum like Albert Haynesworth, I can't guarantee, but I bet my bottom dollar he is going to have a terrific season in New England, because it's just the right spot for him to kind of come through and maybe have some discipline forced upon him, but he's surrounded by other stars, so he's going to feel a need to actually practice and produce. I mean, heck, the guy even passed his conditioning test, so you know he's serious about playing there, you know? So you just look at that, and then you look at him getting a Sean Ellis. To me, and this situation hasn't finished yet, although it looks like it's going to finish in the Giants' favor, but to me, I wouldn't have been surprised if the Patriots made a big pitch to try and get O.C. Mignola. Could you imagine them with the four, and they got Ellis and Haynesworth on the inside, and then O.C. coming off the edge on the right end? So, you know, it looks like O.C. will be back with the Giants. He's going to Atlanta tonight to get a second opinion on his knee. The knee, from what I've been told, was more a, you know, hold it over their head. If you're really not going to trade me and I really want out, you know what, I'll just go get knee surgery because I need it. But it right. seems like they're both, it seems like they're both amenable enough that they're going to be able to work something out. OC realizes that Giants don't have the cap money. Brandon Jacobs restructured his deal. Antrell Roll and Corey Webster all lopped off a lot of base salary to help the team, and they're still right up against the cap, and OC knows that. So if they can find a creative way to get him a lot of incentive money by starts, easily attained incentives by starts, by sacks, I think he will agree to it. And to me, guys, OC, he's not a dig your heels in the sand, I'm going to fight you to the death type of guy. He's not a holdout guy. He's not, you know, Michael Strahan, sure, when he held out, you knew he was going to hold out all the camp. You knew he was going to show up before the season, and you knew he was going to play well. OC's just not wired that way. And the Giants, you know, listen, they're negotiating, and they realize that too. So they're benefiting from the fact that he really, whether he wants to ultimately be here or not, I think he will be here, because I think they'll come up with enough of a situation financially to make it worth his while. And listen, he's humbled. They said, go find a trader, you know, someone that'll give us a first round pick for you. And they probably would have taken a second, and they couldn't even find anyone willing to give up a second. So right now, his market value is as low as it's been in years, and he knows it, so he really doesn't have many moves from a negotiation point. So I know we weren't talking just about OC, but I just had some news there for you guys. I wanted to
actually, you know, and you and I have talked about previously on the show, Ken, the great first couple of years that Jerry Reese has had as a general manager. So he always seems to have the team in good position here, whether it be the drafting or other acquisitions of players. You mentioned a name, and it caught me, you know, in my mind and registered here. I just want to take a moment here. Maybe you could referee something here between Russ and I. One of the only philosophical disagreements I think Russ and I have had on anything is the role of schematics and formations in different sports, and maybe particularly football. The name you mentioned was Albert Haynesworth, because I've been one of the rare guys to say, I don't want to ever make it sound like I'm sticking up for his act or what he did in D.C., but I do think that when he says, hey, what are you idiots paying me $100 million to be a space eater for? I think he's got a point, because why would you have that guy on your roster if you're going to a 3-4? I don't get it. That's a guy that needs to be attacking and not taking up space for your quote-unquote linebackers to do the attacking, as was the scheme in D.C. I mean, I think in terms of X's and O's, he had a point, even if he was a complete ass in how he went about it and how everything went down. So, Russ, start with you. React to what I just said there. I don't imagine there's a ton of it that you agree with, but give me your thoughts, and I'd love to get Ken's.
Well, it's a situation where I think there is some sense to it, and I hated the fact that when Parcells did that with the Jets,
and the linebacker's name is escaping me right now, went to the Steelers, won the Super Bowl, couldn't play in the Jets system because they went from a 3-4 to a 4-3. And then, James Farrior became a Pro Bowler and a Super Bowl winner, and the Jets got to watch him while Parcells devised this new system. So I always feel like if you're a football player, then you'll figure it out, and you'll figure out your role. And I understand what you're saying about Haynesworth, but I saw the other part of Haynesworth, too, where he was a lazy guy who didn't want to get – and forgetting about the conditioning thing, because I think that was just a pissing match between him and Shanahan. I think that's all that was. But I think it just became a demotivating factor for him to sort of look at that defense and say, oh, wow, now I'm not the focal point. But go ahead, Ken. I'll let you go.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, you always hear GM say, and Jerry Reese says it about three times a day, you can never have too many pass rushers. No,
right.
No one ever says you can never have too many run-stopping defensive ends or defensive tackles. Those guys don't get paid. Those guys, I don't want to say they're a dime a dozen, but those guys are a heck of a lot easier to find.
But they're a dime a dozen.
Guys that can, yeah, exactly, then can rush the passer and make a difference. And that's what Haynesworth did, you know, before he got to Washington. He made his name on that, and being a disruptive force up front. And when you put him in that type of scheme, you know, maybe they thought he would benefit from that type of scheme, but I don't see how they could think that, because it doesn't seem to make sense. And, you know, the proof was in the pudding that it certainly did not make sense. So you put him back at tackle, where, you know, the guy to his right, guy to his left can play a little run defense, and you know, I'm just coming forward all the time, and I think you're going to see a market difference. And I agree, you know, you made a great point, Rusty, with James Farrior, because a lot of times coaches, you know, and I saw it with Dan Reeves way back when with the Giants here, a lot of times coaches like their system, and then they like to force the players into it. You can't do that anymore with all the movement going on and the way players change teams from year to year. You need to be able to take your players and then formulate a system. And that's why so many coaches have had problems, because it's just not, it's an inability to adapt to today's game. You know, you may love a 4-3, and in theory it may have worked in years gone by, but if you only have three rushers or a dearth of defensive ends, you can't do it. You got to switch. You got to do different things. And you've seen a lot of coaches throughout the years, including the Redskins with their 3-4 move, you know, just fail to kind of adapt to the times and change with the times. And there's no longer plugging players into a system. Now the players determine the system, and the coach needs to, you know, deal with it from that aspect, guys.
Ken, you brought up something that Russ and I were discussing, I think, right before you came on with us here, specifically the fact that teams are not able to, teams like my Cleveland Browns, the new head coach, new defensive coordinator, new schemes on both sides of the ball, not able to get everybody fit into what they're doing for this year. The irony is the Browns have had better personnel for the 4-3 ever since they switched away from it. Now they're just acknowledging it and going back to it. So it's not a matter of the personnel, but it's a matter of everybody learning a new playbook. Offensively, now it's the West Coast offense, which is a marked difference from whatever Eric Mangini allegedly called an offense last year. So there's a lot of things that are different. Russ and I had kind of been in broad agreement about this, Ken, that this year you're going to see a lot more continuity than usual, because you don't have the leveling effect of down teams like Tampa Bay getting to go over things through the course of an offseason as they did last year, kind of come out and surprise everybody. Hey, look at how much we learned in OTAs and mini camps and all these things that were under the radar. Do you agree that there's going to be way more continuity from last season to this season in terms of the good teams and the bad teams? Almost, Russ used the word aberration, and I would agree with that.
Yeah, no, I definitely think so. And it's as much as, you know, like you said, you didn't have the OTAs, that type of thing. But what you're going to see then is rookies are going to have a much bigger impact, because obviously no rookies have had that. And the teams that are able to get something out of their guys quickly are certainly going to benefit from the teams that aren't. I mean, and I'm not, that's no huge idea there, you know, breaking notion there. That's obvious. But it's determining which of the teams are going to be able to kind of force feed. Sorry, we're at the Meadowlands and we're flying planes everywhere.
No problem.
You know, that are trying to force feed their rookies and get as much out of them. Those teams are going to benefit. Now, you know, people are saying, does the lockout help a team like the Giants? Does it hurt a team like the Giants? And to me, that's all nonsense. The lockout is going to help good teams, and the lockout's going to hurt bad teams. And that's simply it. You know, yeah, you didn't get the time to spend all offseason, but neither did the Eagles, and neither did the Redskins, and neither did the Cowboys. So to me, it's kind of a level playing field that's just been pushed back, and now the onus is on you to create a difference, to find a third-round pick, like say, let's say the Giants have in Jarrell Jernigan, who can be a slot receiver, he can be a punt returner, he can be a kick returner. Well, you know what? The Eagles' third-round pick didn't have any OTAs all offseason either, but maybe they don't get anything out of them, whereas the Giants do. That's where you're going to be able to make a difference, is your rookies, because you're right. Everybody else, it's just kind of sliding from one year to the next. Was there more off-season movement than I expected? Yeah, there was. I really thought a lot more guys would stay home, you know, just in the theory of, I don't have time to move to a new city and find a new place to live and get my kids in a new school like you normally do would with an extended free agency period. There was more movement than I expected, but even that said, the seamless transition from last year to the next year is certainly going to be more so than you would normally see if we had a regular off season.
Absolutely, no question about that. And the thing that's interesting to me, Russ, as you were going through the list and you were enumerating a lot of the top signings previously, going off of what Ken just said right there as far as the free agency and the movement, what was the common denominator of the overwhelming majority of the names that you were mentioning Russ? It was that they were going to good teams. By and large,
right.
when it came to the marquee players, it was the rich getting richer in this offseason.
Yeah, they were choosing their destination. They were trying to figure out who's going to make the Super Bowl. They were trying to play with friends that they had played with before, that there had been some continuity with. And ultimately, yeah, they don't want to play for a bad team. So we saw a lot of guys take a lot of less money because of that.
And the one thing that also, too, and you know, Ken, you were just talking about this now as far as expecting some players to stay home. I would have thought that would have been the case, particularly with some of the lesser whites in the league, because there's going to be this floor getting set up over the course of the next couple of years. And at the very least, theoretically, the Cincinnati's, the Tampa Bay's, they can retain their existing players. They may not be able to get the other players to come along, but if they develop anybody who's particularly sterling, you know, theoretically, it's going to be easier to hang on to them. And yet, I haven't seen a lot of these peasant teams there in the league really taking much advantage of this, Ken.
Yeah, no, they really haven't. And it's, you know, it's kind of a little bit of a surprise, but going back to what Russ said, they're willing to take less money to go where they want, as opposed to maybe breaking the bank somewhere else. Well, just how this offseason unfolded, that wasn't really an option because teams, you know, were kind of thrown into this. Normally, teams would have a month to figure out how to get under the cap, and you know what, we have this much money and that much money, and we can overpay this guy. You know, Barry Cofield, he hit it big in Washington, and good for him. Is he a $6 million a year player? I don't think so. He's a nice player, but he was the exception as opposed to the norm because a lot of the players did not have that option. They didn't have that, you know, huge $6, $7, $8 million deal staring them in the face. So the thought was, like Russ said, was, okay, I'm only going to get three a year, only in single quotes, of course, but I'm only going to get three a year. So you know what? Let me go to New England and get it. Let me go to the Jets and get it, you know, as opposed to, you know, I can get three from New England or five or six from Seattle. You know what? Seattle's a nice place to live. Let's bank all the extra money and move the family there. That option wasn't there for most players this offseason, and normally it is. So it made it easier for guys to just say, okay, let's go to a good team. You know, there wasn't any Miami Heat stuff where everyone kind of ganged up and said, let's go here. Although it kind of seems like it with the Pats and the Eagles, but it was more born out of the lack of available money out there because teams didn't have time to get under the cap sufficiently than it was actually like, I cannot wait to go play for the Patriots for $3 million because you know if they were getting offered six or seven, some would still take the three for New England, but a heck of a lot more would go elsewhere for double the money.
Sure, we're just under a minute to go, Rick.
Okay, you're balancing money and a chance to win there, no question about it. All right, in our remaining time, let's just get the other predictions here. The team that we really haven't mentioned much through the course of the night, if at all, Packers. The team that won the Super Bowl with like a third of their team on the IR. So I'm going to say Packers over Patriots. Hard to believe I'm taking the defending champions, and it's not even nearly a chalk pick. But that's my pick for the Super Bowl. How do you see it, Russell?
Jets over Eagles.
Okay, very good, very good. I wish I could say my Browns were going to be there, but they won't be. Ken, what do you think?
I think Atlanta's going to make a lot of noise, but I'm copying off Russ's homework. Jets over Eagles.
Interesting, interesting. Well, great to have this on with both of you.